Christ in some way.
Other
announcements. For those of you who have been re-elected to council, or any member students who are here who were elected to council, congratulations. For those of you who ran in the elections, congratulations. Again, like I said during the executive elections, it does take, you have to put yourself out there for elections, and it takes a lot of courage to do that. So well done to everyone who participated, and well done to the elections office. So I think they put on some great elections. I'm sure we'll hear from them a little bit more later during presentations. But before we get to presentations, we'll quickly take attendance, and then we'll move on to the two presentations we have for this evening. So, President Rahman.
Present.
Vice President Bannister.
Present.
Vice President Sundari.
Present.
Vice President Patches.
Present.
Vice President Gosain.
Present.
Governor Champagne.
Present.
Councilor McKinley.
Yep.
Councilor Angus.
Present.
Councilor Datirwa.
Oh, here, sorry.
It's okay, I saw the wave of the hand. Councilor Manda.
Here.
Councilor Larson.
Here.
Councilor Victoria Dion.
Here.
Councilor Lilo. Councilor Yim.
Here.
Councilor Designate Marin for Councilor Hammond. Councilor Designate Islam for Councilor Alpamori. Councilor Prasad.
Here.
Councilor Prakna. Councilor Nahi. Councilor Designate for Councilor Nick Dion. Councilor Hashim.
Here.
Councilor Brophy.
Here.
Councilor Christensen.
Here.
Councilor Sunday.
Here.
Councilor Scott.
Present.
Councilor Flannery.
Here.
Councilor Kwan. Councilor Howie.
Here.
Councilor Warrior. Councilor Newman.
Here.
Councilor Nguyen.
Here.
Councilor Mahal. Councilor Farouk. Councilor Wong.
Here.
Councilor Kim.
Here.
And here, no manager is not. All right, so with that, we'll move to, we'll close speaker's business, and we'll move to presentations. So we'll go to presentation item 2A, Health and Dental Plan Fees Presentation by Student Care, excuse me, sponsored by Vice President Gosain. Is there a seconder for this presentation? Councilor Flannery, thank you very much. Is there any opposition to listening to this presentation from Student Care? Seeing none, we'll turn it over to Mr. Yamagishi for his presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Student Care. Basically, is this right?
Yeah.
Cool. Do you want me to sit here, or should I?
You can do whatever you'd like. It's your presentation, Mr. Yamagishi.
Walk around.
All right, fine.
It's not your first rodeo.
Yeah, I've been here before. So just to introduce myself. My name is Colton Yamagishi. I work with Student Care. We're the health and dental plan provider for you guys at the UASU. And if you don't know me before, I used to be here as president, vice president, business counselor, counselor, arts counselor, a whole bunch of things. So, yeah, thanks, guys. So it feels a little bit weird to be back. Honestly, I'm like kind of a little bit nervous about it because I feel like such a hack coming back to council that. Part of my soul. but with all that aside, we actually have some pretty important stuff to talk about today. We've got some important changes coming to the health and dental plan this year. But first, before I do that, I want to make sure that you guys understand what Student Care does, what your UASU health and dental plan does for students, and how council can be a part of that to make sure you make positive changes for students. So just a quick agenda here. Talks about who we are, what we do, a little bit about mental health. So we did a mental health survey last year. I wanted to tell you a little bit about that. The plan usage, so where is the plan right now and where do we want to take it in the future? And then tree setting, so what kind of action does council need to take today? Okay, so who are we? Student Care is a private company that was founded by students in 1996. Our founder and CEO, Lev Buckman, was actually a former student executive at McGill. At the SSMU over there, and they assigned him to look at a health and dental plan that they were using, and he said, I don't like it at all. I feel like students are getting ripped off, and this is just a terrible, terrible structure, so I'm going to create my own company. He started off with just one student association, and we've grown considerable amounts since then. We've got 700,000 plus students in our network now at over 75 student associations across the country. So by far, we are the largest health and dental plan provider in the country. And most of the major schools, U of A being one of them, are kind of in our plan, and we're proud to have them in our network. Just to touch a bit about what our company does. So we have a head office in Montreal, and that's where most of our operations occur. We also have campus offices all across the country. So on the sixth floor sub, kind of tucked away in the corner, we've got our health and dental plan office that helps answer questions for students and make sure they know how to file their claims and solves any problems that they have. Also, student care, we act as a broker and consultant for you. So we aren't actually the insurer for the plan. The insurer is Desjardins. It's kind of like a financial company that operates mostly out of Quebec, and they are the underwriter or the insurer for all the claims that come in and out of the plan. So just some basic facts, interesting things about the plan here. It was established by student referendum, so similar to the elections you guys just had. Long, long time ago, students were asked, do you want a health and dental plan, and do you want student care to be your provider? Fortunately for us, you said yes, and we've been here ever since. There's a lot of claims that come in and out of the plan. So we did almost $4 million in claims last year, and that's both from the health and dental plan combined. So lots of student money going into the plan, and fortunately lots of student money coming back out of the plan to make sure you're getting good value from the benefits we provide. Lastly, there's over 20,000 students in the service. So technically, you could argue that the health and dental plan is the largest student service provided by the SU, though it might not be the most involved. It has a large, large volume of students who take advantage of its benefits. Okay, so plan benefits. I'm not going to get into this today, but if you have any questions, let me know. We cover in like very, very basic detail healthcare coverage, just like prescription drugs, paramedical practitioners. So if you go to the chiropractor, you get a massage, you go to a psychologist, things like that. Vision coverage for glasses and contacts, and checkups, dental coverage. So we cover both preventative care, so that's like cleanings and checkups, and also some restorative work. So say if you need to get some gum work done, or maybe like a filling or something like that done too, we have some coverage for that. And lastly, something that's unique to our plan is travel coverage. So students travel sometimes a lot more than other people, and because of that, we give you coverage for up to 120 days that you can go on, say, a study tour or even just like a really long travel period. And all you have to do to get renewed coverage is come back for 24 hours to Canada, and you can actually go again. So yeah, it's pretty good. Travel coverage can be really expensive if you've ever tried to get like a private, like Expedia insurance or something like that. It's not written here, but as part of the plan, I believe it's only $6 or $7 of your plan goes towards the travel coverage. It's not bad. So I touched on this a little bit. So our role as a consultant, at the end of the year, we always go back and negotiate with Desjardins to try and get the best deal for students. What I mean by the best deal is trying to get the maximum value for your dollars. So whenever we decide how much claims are coming in, student care does our own internal calculations, which I'll talk a little bit about more later. And then we negotiate with the provider. We also do a lot of surveys and strategy and reporting. So I have meetings with the health and dental plan committee, with the executive throughout the year to let them know how the plan is going, and if anything alarming is happening, if anything good is happening, anything bad is happening, I want to make sure that you know that. And as the administrator, there's a lot of different pieces here. So we have our call center in Montreal, we've got our campus office, we've got our internal communications department that sends out all those emails that you might find annoying sometimes, but they're very useful to let you know about the plan, things that are happening, and all that. So I put this graphic here because it's really hard to read, and I don't want you to focus on this. This just talks about like the extent of member services we have. So our member services office, they use what's called a CRM system to track all of our student data that comes in. First, I wanted to let you know it's extremely secure. We don't use a cloud or anything like that. It's all in a server in Montreal, and it's a private server. So your student data is protected. We've never had a breach, even though one of our competitors may have had that at some point in their history. We're kind of proud to say that. And yeah, every time you call in, it creates a specific case. So say if you called the health and dental plan office right now and said, hey, I've got a problem with my claim, I'm not sure what's going on, they can look into your record and see everything that's happened since you became a member of the plan. And that way, if there's any kind of variances or things that are happening, they can see all of your history and help you out from there. So communications, this just talks about all the ways that you can contact us and we contact you. So we've got our website, studentcare.ca. We also have links on the SU website as well as the University of Alberta website. We send emails not only about the health and dental plan, but about our network, which I'll touch on in a little bit as well. And lastly, on-campus events. So we are a student-founded company, and we're really interested in supporting students, you guys. So a couple things that Student Care has done in the past few years, you've got the Bill Smith Lounge on the 6th floor sub. We put in a donation for that. We also help out with Week of Welcome and the Alberta Student Leadership Summit that just happened a couple months ago. So if anything comes up, Robin always knows that we're a good contact to have to help out with student initiatives.
Yep.
Oh, and the mental health web, is that public? The mental health website and stuff is.
Yeah, it's in the works, but it's public
Cool.
that you were the sponsor, so.
Yeah.
But it's now, so.
Hey, we heard it. It's on the record. There it is. So networks. We have kind of professional networks that we keep with dentists, massage therapists, optometrists, etc. We try and negotiate a better deal for students with these providers. So what we do is, let's say we'll go to a dentist and say, "Hey, would you like to be a part of the network?" And they go, "What does that mean?" And I say, "Well, that means you give an extra discount to students." They say, "Why would I ever do that? I want to make as much money as possible." And then I say, "Because we'll drive more students towards your business, and you'll make more money in the long run, and you'll have good karma because you help young people who have a hard time paying for dentists. It's very expensive." So things like that. We have a ton of networks in the Edmonton area, and you can also use the networks across the country. So say if you live in Ontario in the summertime, you can use the networks there. As long as they know you're part of our plan, you can take part in the networks out there as well. One nice thing on the networks last year that we did is the dental network. Dentists in Alberta make a ton of money. There's no dental fee guide, and if you're from another province, you might notice that going to the dentist costs like upwards of $300 more here than it does in, say, BC, for example. So we didn't think this was good, and we went to them and said, "Hey, why don't you give us an extra 10% off on your discount?" We thought that they would be like, "No, this is awful. Why would we ever do that?" But they just kind of said yes. So that's one thing we did last year. You get an extra 10% off from our dental network. So it's very exciting. Okay, mental health survey. So I just put some very, very basic facts. If you guys want to see the survey, I think Vice President Gosain has a copy, and I can send it to you as well. We did a very in-depth survey, both on the national level and specifically for the University of Alberta Students Union, and we wanted to learn more about mental health and how our health plan can help students. So just some basic facts here. About 77.7% of students, it should be 100, but 77.7, decided that mental health was something very important to them, and they wanted to do something about it. 54.7, I think this number is pretty high. Students said that they have personally experienced a mental illness, which is more than half. So say if you have 30,000 undergrads here, that's 15,000 students who have gone under some mental duress during their studies, have a bit of a hard time, and need someone to help them out. So out of this, there is 43.8% said they feel they've been treated negatively because of this mental illness or the struggles they've had. So one of the big things we're always pushing for is reducing stigma, and the UISU is actually one of the students' unions across the country that's kind of pushing the way forward and on the forefront of helping reduce mental health stigma. So that's really great. Lastly, this is kind of like a not great fact that I pulled out, but it was on there. 87.7 students were aware of the existence of mental health services on campus. However, only 28.8% have used them, and this is well below the national average of 40.7%. Being from the University of Alberta, I know a little bit about why this might be. We've got things like backups at the counseling offices, students who are unable to get like a visit with a private practitioner as well. So specifically in Edmonton and Alberta, this is a bit of an issue. So Student Care is trying our best to find ways to find alternative resources for students to get mental health help and counseling. Cool. So some numbers for you here. These charts won't make a ton of sense to you, but I just want to give you a general idea of what's happening. So this is the breakdown of health claims for your plan. You'll see the majority is in prescription drugs, 73%, and then kind of an even breakdown between paramedical practitioners, which is health practitioners, medical services and equipment, so these are things like wheelchairs, like surgical stockings, things like that, and then vision care at about 15%. For dental, a big piece of it, also going to preventative services, so these are those cleanings and checkups, and then a smaller piece, but an ever larger growing piece, is the fillings, endodontics, periodontics, and minor restoration and surgery. Okay, so per capita health claims, this is the growth in claims that's happening in your plan. Everything that happens kind of from the monetary side of the plan is driven by claims. So 90% of the cost of your plan is driven by how much students are claiming each year. You'll see in health, we had a fairly large increase last year, and this year is projected to go up again. We saw a 15% increase to the health and dental plan fee last year, I believe, and we have another increase of 12% expected to come this year. For dental, it's also a very, very large increase. 15% per capita is projected. And one of the main reasons for this is the opening of the Smiles Dental Clinic in the Paw Center. They are doing a very good job promoting dental work. And that's not necessarily a bad thing that the claims are going up. This means the students are using the plan more and more. But we just have to make sure that we do this in a sustainable way that isn't too expensive for students every single year. Okay, so some basic highlights. I said the biggest increases in health on a per capita basis, so this is like per student claims, were in vision care, physiotherapy, chiropractor, and prescription drugs. And there's a 117% increase year over year in psychology. So from a dollars perspective, this is about $20,000 in claims from 2014, 2015 to about $42,000 in claims from 2015, 2016. This comes hand in hand with some increases that we've made to coverage for mental health services. And this is really a good thing. If we think about, I think 3 years ago, I think it was about $5,000 in claims were made to $40,000 being made the year after. That's $35,000 in student visits to psychologists that weren't happening before. And we've made that available by choice by you, by the Students' Council, to make that change for the plan. So really happy about that. Dental claims, 32.5% increase in the non-preventative care. So that's the fillings, endodontics, periodontics, et cetera. Okay, so this part is a little bit confusing. I'll try and make it as simple as possible. We're talking about fee setting and how we set the plan fees for the plan each year. So this is our most basic formula we could put together. So projected claims, which we just looked at, are about 90% of the formula that decides how much the plan will be. We also add an inflation trend, which student care kind of takes data from the entire country and all the different plans we have and decides how much we think that number is going to inflate year over year. We add the admin expenses. So student care has a flat fee that we charge to your students. And the reason that it's really important it's a flat fee is that when claims go up or claims go down, what we get is compensation doesn't change. And we think that's really important because we don't want to have any like skin in the game for how much we're charging. And that always promises that we're working in the best interest of students and trying to get you the best value. Add all those things together and you get the plan cost. So go to the next page here. So what do you do when your claims are increasing by 12% and 15% per year? There's some easy options and some more difficult options, and we've decided to go forward with a combination of the two this year. So A, you can increase the plan fee. Last year, Students' Council said we haven't had a plan fee increase for a very long time. Let's just kind of bump it forward and make sure that we can increase this by a significant amount. Because it's happening 2 years in a row, we want to make sure we can control these costs. So we've looked at reducing benefits. One of the benefits that we've looked at is the dental annual maximum. So this is the maximum that you can claim per year for dental visits. We also have a reserve fund that has approximately $800,000, I believe is the number. And this is money that's set aside in years where the plan has a surplus. And this gets banked year over year over year so that we can use this money in times where, or sorry, I guess it's your reserve fund, I shouldn't say we, in times that the plan is under a bit of stress. So this is a year coming up where that reserve fund might come in handy. These are the calculations. I don't expect you to understand this at all, but just to show you kind of the numbers and where we're coming from. So the projected total plan cost right up here in the top, $293.91. That's what we expect the plan to cost next year in total. What's the current plan fee? $257.95. So you find a variance of $35.96, or a more relative number, 14% is the increase that we're looking to find. So when we went to the Health and Dental Plan Committee, they said we don't want to do 14 or 15% increases every single year. This is just too much. We need it to be, I guess from a tuition perspective, it needs to be something we can foresee and plan for. And these increases, 30% in 2 years, is just too much. So we said, let's go for about 10% to the plan fee increase, and let's find the other 4% in different areas. So we're taking about 1.5% from the Students' Union Helmand Dental Plan Reserve Fund, and then 2% in that benefit cut that I talked about, so reducing the dental annual maximum from $750 to $650. Why did we choose that specific benefit? Because of the fact that these dentists are kind of charging towards the maximum. So say if you go get your teeth cleaned and they know that you have $750 of coverage, they're going to do everything they can to try and hit that maximum and get coverage for the entire thing. So we said, say if a dental visit should cost about $500, why don't we reduce that annual maximum and then hopefully they'll cap out lower and they'll charge you a lower cost for those fees. When you put that hand in hand with the 30% discount you can get from the networks, we think this still gives students sufficient coverage and will help save the plan a significant amount of money. So just to give kind of a gleaning perspective of what I just said, we're going to hope to increase the plan fee by 10%, subsidize using the reserve fund, about 10% of the fund would be used for this, reduce the dental benefit, and then we're also doing a very, very confusing thing, which is rebalancing the health and dental fees. The reason for this is right now both the health fee and the dental fee are about the same, but the premium, so the amount the insurance company is charging you, is actually more for dental than it is for health. We wanted this to reflect that cost a little bit better, so we're just rebalancing the amount that's coming from each plan to find that same total. So that's pretty much what I have for you today. This is all just data. Council is kind of the ultimate decider of what happens with the plan, and the Health and Dental Plan Committee is just meant to guide you on the way there. So I'll pass it off to questions if you have anything or if anyone wants to add any more detail. I'm here to answer questions.
We have about 10 minutes for questions, so are there any questions for Mr. Yamaguchi? I'll start with is that Governor Champagne?
Thank you, Speaker. Thank you for the presentation. Yes, my question is aiming towards plan cost. So any surplus accumulated over during the year, because obviously the cost of the plan is a little lower than the revenue, what happens to that revenue, that extra revenue?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question, Governor. So that's a great question. Kind of finding out where the money is coming in and where it goes when we have a little bit extra. So say in a hypothetical situation, we had a plan fee that was $100, and the plan premium, so what we were paying the insurance company, was $90. That extra $10 in that year would go towards the health and dental plan reserve. So we actually never had a moment where we took money from the reserve in the history of the plan, and we've contributed to it every single year. Even last year, the projections that we put forward were a bit conservative, so we jumped by 15%, and I think it increased by about 12 or 13. So we had a bit of a subsidy to provide to the plan, to the reserve fund that year as well. The reason we do that is because it's always better to have a bit of extra money than to be short and have to cut benefits halfway through the year. But the other perspective is that some of that money would go to the insurance company, and we always want to make sure that we're maximizing the amount of money that comes in going back to students. So we, as student care, kind of control that cost and try and report that to the Health and Dental Plan Committee throughout the year.
Vice President Patches?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the presentation, Mr. Yamaguchi. My question then is, your presentation was great and provided a lot of clarity around the process, and I'm happy you were able to make it out. Do you have, what are the next steps for Students' Council then in the Health and Dental Plan Committee with the remainder of this term?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. So that also is a great question, and I'm happy that you brought that up. So like I said, Student Council is kind of the ultimate decider of what happens with the plan. This is the recommendation that came forward from our Health and Dental Plan Committee meeting last week. This is a committee that is comprised of some of the executive. We also have some kind of students at large who sit on this committee, and a lot of them are either health professionals in training or people who are very, very interested in health and have a vested interest in doing so. So they took a look at all the data reports that I brought forward, and decided that these were kind of the best options for the plan as it is. I know that next council meeting, which is one of the last ones, there's a recommendation coming forward as a motion for student council to approve. So from my perspective, it's probably a really great opportunity to ask any questions that you have right now. And also before that meeting happens and kind of the 2 weeks in between, if any questions come up, definitely let one of the vice presidents know who are who's on the committee, or you can forward those questions to myself. And we just want to make sure that everything is smoothed out so you feel comfortable and satisfied with the way that the plan is moving forward. Because you know, if there is anything that needs to be changed or anything even that you can think of that you think might be a good opportunity, definitely let us know because that's how we make the plan better every single year.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councillor Howie.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you so much for the presentation. That was super informative. I just had a question that's more just like, I just don't know this. This plan is completely, like you can opt out completely of the plan. And I was wondering if you have the numbers of like how many students normally do opt out of the plan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. I'm just gonna pull up the numbers on my laptop right now. I think from what I remember telling you earlier, I think there's 20,889 students that are enrolled on average between the health and dental plans.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to find the current enrollment at the University of Alberta for undergrad students, which is probably around 30,000, maybe 29,000.
Okay.
With that said, you have a very unique plan structure that I think might be the only one in the country where you can opt out of the plan just because you feel like it. Other schools and other associations' plans, you have to have proof of coverage. So say like a parent's plan that you're enrolled under or an employer's plan or just kind of like a private plan that you're a part of. But when we implemented the plan at U of A, it was really important to the executives at that time that students who didn't want health and dental coverage could just opt out of it. So I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's what it is. So there you have it.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Vice President Bannister.
Thank you for the presentation. I have a very specific question, so if you don't know the answer, that's totally fine. What percentage of the prescription drugs would you say go towards birth control?
Thank you for the question. Give me just one second and I'm gonna pull up the data. And I'm going to be giving you 2015, 2016 data because that is not based on a projection. So one thing I'll let you know too is these projections that we do, they are only using 6 months of claims, so from September until now in the year. So we have to do a projection for the rest of the year. And as we get more and more data, we can give you a more accurate number on that. But let me just find the drug report for 2015, 2016. And exactly, I'm doing an Excel calculation here. 21.7% of prescription drugs are for what they call anovulants, so birth control, basically. Some other data too, I guess that you might find important is the second highest prescription drug claim is for antidepressants, and that is coming in at about 10%. One really nice thing to hear about the U of A is that we have some other schools that are experiencing issues with kind of stimulant drugs being, I guess, abused would probably be the worst and best word to use for the situation, where they're seeing that going up like as high as like 33% of their prescription drug claims, not all for cases of prescribed use. So not a trend here at the U of A. Let's hope that it stays the same. And yeah, that's about it.
We have a question from the Gateway.
This fee went up last year by about 10-15%. I can't remember exactly what. And you guys are proposing for it to go up again. I'm just wondering what kind of long-term increase you're expecting from this kind of fee, if it's going to continue to rise.
For sure. That's an excellent question. And a question that I kind of ask myself every year when we do these projections. So with a health and dental plan for students specifically, it is very, very difficult to do long-term planning because you're looking at a population that changes every 4 years. When you see an employer plan, most of them stay pretty stable and increase by kind of like the health package CPI every single year. Student health and dental plans are very different because you see changes in trends that happen. So
say for example the psychology benefit change that we made 2 years ago. If we were looking 5 years ago, we never would have seen this coming, and it was kind of something that we had to address in the moment and has had a significant impact on the plan. So we've seen a large increase in the last 2 years. We're hoping obviously that it'll settle out a little bit in the upcoming year, but we really can't predict that moving forward without making up numbers, if that makes sense. So there are national trends that we can look at, and we can also look at like the last 5 years of data and use like weighted or rolling averages. But I never want to be just spewing out numbers because things can change so much from year to year that the best thing to do is just to keep a keen eye on it and make sure that we keep track of the health claims that are coming out from year to year and from month to month.
I was just curious with that amount for per semester or per year?
Sorry, which amount?
Was it 200 or 300, like the for the plan?
Okay, if you just wanna go back one slide.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, so this is the full year fee. So when you are covered under the plan, you're actually covered from September until the end of August the upcoming year. So it covers you for the summer months that you might not be in classes as well.
Governor Champagne?
Could we return to the slide where we describe the cost again?
Which one is that?
It's in the very beginning of the presentation. Oh, actually it was right there. Yeah, there we go. Okay, yeah, so this this formula, let's call it, is that something that in terms of projected claims, is that something that Desjardins gives you guys, or is that something you guys come up with?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That is an excellent question. I feel like you should be a member of the committee if you have something like that. No, so that's a great perspective you have on that. This calculation is one that we do internally, and we take all of the data and try and figure out from the best of our ability what we think the plan fee should be. And we take this to Desjardins, which also has a similar calculation, I'm sure that they do on their own side, and then we negotiate. So one of the benefits to being in a Desjardins plan is that most of our business nationally is through them, so we have a lot of leverage for negotiation. So say you're looking at a tough year coming up this year with a 14% increase, we might be able to shave off 1 or 2 points just purely through negotiation because of the amount of students that we have in the plan. So there's a couple other options that we've been talking about internally for next year, and some of those things are like looking at what's called an RFQ. So you can go to market with the plan and look at different insurers and say, give me your best price or premium guarantees or things like that can save students money. And they kind of go to battle on that, and that can give you some leverage. Other things too is that we have what's called an enhanced plan, and it's something we might be looking at next year. We haven't really chatted too much about it, but it would be a tiered plan that would have a enhanced plan that you're automatically enrolled in that has a higher level of coverage at a higher price, and then a basic plan that has a lower level of coverage at a lower price. So for those students who might not be looking to make that many points. There's a lot of different options for moving forward in the future that we can look into.
We have one more question from Governor Champagne.
No, it was less a question, more of a follow-up comment on that, if I can do that. Yeah, and the kind of bring it to market, that's kind of where my head was at, just in terms of if annual increases keeps being around 10-15%, that's just in the long term not sustainable or affordable for students, because students' income or wallet doesn't increase 10-15% a year. So right now I subscribe to that plan, and I thought it was a great plan, but you don't want it to resemble when you insure students, you don't, it's not the same as insuring adults. But sorry, adults.
Excuse
When you insure students, not the same as insuring not students. Let's go for that one. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, so our time is up. From what I've been told, we have a question from the live stream, and we also have a question from counselor. So we can extend the presentation if you'd like.
I'd like to move to extend the presentation by 5 minutes.
Is there a seconder for that?
Seconded.
Is there any opposition to extending the presentation by 5 minutes? seeing none, we'll extend.
I'll take my break.
Just have to click the check mark. And then
Whatever.
click this
Uh,
one.
thank you, Mr. Speaker. So thanks for the question, Governor. First off, I wanna start by saying I think we're all adults here, but adults with a restricted budget, and that's really important. Yeah, I get what you're saying about going to market with the RFQ. That's definitely a strategy. The one thing to note, though, is that as long as we keep the benefits the same and claims continue to increase, no matter which insurer we go with, the cost of the plan will continue to rise. So that's when we have to look at some of those levers, like changing the structure of the benefits or getting a premium guarantee. What a premium guarantee is, sometimes when you sign on with a new insurer or you renew the license with a current insurer, they'll freeze the premium for 1 or 2 or 3 years. And what that allows you to do is in that second year where the premium would have gone up, that you save that surplus amount of money that that can come in, you can put that towards the reserve fund. So it is an effective strategy. I just don't recommend doing it every year, because sometimes if you do it too often, they'll be like, "I don't like you anymore, and we're just gonna give you the same price anyway." But usually we say every 3 to 4 years, doing an RFQ process is probably a good idea.
So I think we had a question from the live stream. Go ahead, Bashir. You can I don't know if it's working or not, but I think the question you had was one of the last time was that the fee increased. Maybe you could touch on that again.
Sorry, just to touch on the fact that the fee increased last year.
Yeah, like the last time the fee increased, I think was the question.
Oh, yeah, very similar situation. So we saw increases primarily driven by dental last year and psychology. And it left us in a similar situation where we had to make a plan fee increase. And yeah, council chose last year to stomach the entire fee increase and use a little bit of the reserve fund, but fortunately the projection was higher than the reality of claims that were made, so we saved a bit of money and put that into the reserve.
So we'll jump to Council Flynn, and then we'll jump back to Bashir here. Go ahead, Council Flynn.
Thank you for the presentation. It's good to see you made it back from Vancouver in one piece. For somebody who is being covered under the plan, if for whatever reason a prescription that they're needing isn't covered, would somebody have any recourse? Can they appeal a decision, or like how does that work, and how what decides what prescriptions are and are not covered? Sorry, that's like two or three questions.
No, that's a great question. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So there's the Alberta Prescription Drug Formulary that we try and follow for everything. With that said, there are exceptions that can be made. So this can happen in two occasions. So A, if a student goes over a maximum, so usually it's about $10,000, that it will kind of get notified that the student has made significant prescription drug claims. And sometimes they'll have to get approved by either the student's union or through our member services office. Member services office will take care of it if it's something that's kind of like low risk to the plan. But say for example, students who have use of biologic drugs, these are things that will treat like Crohn's disease, and are like created in labs, basically, is the idea of a biologic drug. They're very, very expensive, and a lot of them are kind of like proprietary, so they're not covered by the Alberta Health Drug Formulary. They will have to get an exception most of the time for the use of these drugs. We keep a really, really keen eye on these too, because they can like skyrocket the price of your plan. So say if a student has a drug claim that costs $100,000 a year, that's equivalent to like 5,000 students worth of prescription drug claims. So really important that we take a look at that. And also, just a note on that, I made it back from Vancouver alive, but former Vice President Student Life Kwan is very ill.
So maybe we should try again with Bashir, 'cause I think he had another question. If it's gonna work. But his question was, why is the fee increased year after year?
Good. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So that just happens to be the case for the UASC plan right now. The plan fee doesn't necessarily have to increase every single year. That's just the direction that Students' Council has chosen to take it based on the claims reality that your council is faced with. We have some plans, and the UASC plan actually was one of them. For example, in the first, I think, 3 years of the plan, I don't believe there was a plan fee increase at all. So it's not really that we come back and try and increase every year, but the reality is that inflation exists and students are claiming more and more in Alberta. So that's just the reality we're faced with and the decisions that
that we've decided to make. With that said, if it continues to be this large every single year, then we can use some of those opportunities that we talked about with the answer to Governor Champagne's question.
Thank you very much. I think with that our time is up. So unless anyone wants to move to extend the presentation again, I don't think we have anybody on the list. So we'll close the presentation there. If any of you have any questions, I know that Mr. Yamagishi is readily available and you can get his contact information either from any of the executive or you can ask your questions through the SU executive. But thank you very much, Mr. Yamagishi.
Perfect. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. So with that, we'll move on to presentation item two B, Elections Office presentation presented by the Chief Returning Officer, Donald Ottemage. Is there a sponsor and a seconder for this presentation? Councilor Flamin, seconded by Vice President Patches. Is there any opposition to this presentation from the Chief Returning Officer? Seeing none, I'll turn it over to Mr. Ottemage and his elections crew.
Okay. So just like the last presentation we had, we don't have a PowerPoint or anything like that. We're just going off what we want. So thanks for having us again. I know many of you are probably sick of us after this past month, so hopefully we won't keep this too long. However, I felt like it was really important, especially right after both election seasons, that we came to council and discussed our view of what happened during elections, our recommendations for the upcoming council term and election periods as well next year, and also recommendations from all of you as well, since many of you were on the front lines and have great recommendations that we can put in our transition letters for the next CRO and the next DROs as well. So first off, we'll start off with like talking about elections and how everything went. I think in general the highlight was definitely a higher turnout than in previous years with the executive and board of governors representative election. We got 29.577%, I know all numbers, 0.5777% in the executive election, which was a marked increase from I think the previous high in like 2007 or something was 25%, which we were really excited with. And I think a lot of that was not only due to the efforts that we placed as an elections office, but also due to candidates. We talked about the fact that I think we had a lot of candidates this year that appealed to different aspects of, not aspects, but different bases around campus as well, and different bases that maybe had not been reached in the past. And I think that really appealed to some people in getting more people to vote as well. I think a lot of the efforts we did as our, in terms of our elections office, and we'll talk about this a bit later, going more into like promotion videos, trying to reach more bases of campus with more forums, more specialized forums to different areas in campus, I think really worked. But that's all of for all of you to judge and tell us what you think of it. And I said when we came to council back in early January that our goal was 25% in the exec election for turnout, and I'm happy to say that we did beat that quite a lot of amounts, so that was great. That was our first phase of what we wanted to do this year, and our second phase was to get more people running for council seats as well. Myself as being a former councillor as well, I know the importance of council and getting people in seats. We're happy that almost all seats were filled except for physical education and recreation. That's Glenda's fault. No, I'm just kidding. So that I thought that was a great thing. And I think with more representation from faculties, brings more diverse opinions, which can only help council in their efforts for the next coming term. In terms of what we thought worked well, as I mentioned, I think our promotion videos were able to appeal to different targets on campus, to not only people that are a fainting interest in governance, but also people who may not know what the SU is and may not know what student governance does in general here on campus. And also, as I said, forums as well, more specialized forums worked well, going to different places like Lister or Café Saint-Jean or anything like that, I think worked well, and we hope that continues in the future. Our council election turnout was 9.06% or somewhere around there, which has been higher than the 2016 election, the 2014 election. It's hard to compare, at least we think, with the 2015 election, because as Fahim knows, the VP academic race was during that time. So it's kind of hard to compare the 2051. So we think that there was an increase, definitely not only in people running for council, but people interested in voting for council. We think it could have been higher, but that's just the way it went. Obviously, there's the question of voter fatigue by the end of council elections that we have to deal with ourselves. And the other thing I was going to say is I think our get out the vote efforts, and that's mostly credit to Glenda. I think we're better this year, giving out like buttons and anything like that. I think we worked really well, and I know candidates were more enthused with that stuff in both the exec election and during the council election as well. So those are the two main things that or three main things that we saw a increase in terms of the promotion videos, the forums, the get out the vote effort. So we're gonna do. Any of you have anything to say before we go into bylaw?
I think the biggest thing that we are gonna recommend to the next elections office is to continue with the two DROs. I know that it's a bit more of an expenditure by the SU for the elections office, but what it really did was divide responsibilities so Glenda could focus on the Get Out the Vote campaign and I could be in the office to actually help with candidates. And I think it reduced the stress. Like previously, the other DRO made more money but probably was just incapable of doing a better job because you could pay them however much, but they only have so much time. Anyway, so I hope that that continues. And also that because there's two DROs this year, we're going to leave very extensive transition documents because we came into the roles with absolutely zero transition and no knowledge of what we were doing at all. There was nothing other than a couple sleeping bags in the office.
Yeah.
And and I think that will be really, really important for next year because we'll have like kind of a checklist of things that need to be done in December when you first get hired rather than the stuff that you figure out 3 weeks before the election starts. So that will make the elections office a lot more efficient next year, I think.
Yeah, do you have anything to add?
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, and I'll give credit to Councillor Christensen because he pulled for the two DROs thing for quite a while, so it worked great, and I hope the next chief returning officer continues with it. It's not even more expenditure for our budget because the DRO salary was just cut in half because he had half the responsibilities, so it worked out well that way. I know you guys have budget principles today, so hopefully maybe there's an increase in the budget of the elections office, but who knows?
Okay.
So, yeah, definitely I'm going to recommend the next CRO to continue with two DROs. So if we go, also we mentioned the color change was great, as many people have mentioned. Change to yellow did a great job. So we'll go into bylaw recommendations, as I know a lot of people, especially those that have been re-elected or elected now to council for the next term, are going to be interested in this. So there's a wide varying range of things that I'm going to include in my transition letter. I know the DROs are going to include in the transition letters that we'd like to see in terms of improvements in bylaw or any election regulations in general. So the first thing is there was a appeal to Die Board, and there was a ruling on Die Board about conduct at the Meyer Horowitz Forum. And in that ruling, I don't know if anybody's read it. That ruling does state that the Die Board believes that bylaw committee needs to address conduct at forums, because realistically, in bylaw, there's only like a specific section that says no heckling is allowed in the Meyer Horowitz Forum. There's nothing that regulates the conduct of other forums, which is hard not only for candidates to follow, but also for me as a chief returning officer to try to adjudicate, because obviously we don't want to see any malicious activity or harassment happening at forums, but that's something that Die Board wants bylaw committee to clear up and also somewhat also alleviate for the CRO, so there isn't more hassle in dealing with, you know, what is misappropriate conduct at forums, anything like that, because as we said, forums are really important as the elections, and we'll get feedback from you as well for the forums. The second thing is I'm gonna be telling the next CRO to work together with the next Vice President of Operations of Finance, who's the current Vice President of Operations of Finance, to talk to operations and management of the university, or whoever the hell you deal with it, to set a standard for posting and putting up banners in buildings across campus. Because, you know, I've, you know, being involved with elections in the past and running a council election, and also being, you know, CRO for these last two, for the executive and council elections, I find it totally ridiculous that there's different guidelines that candidates have to follow with different buildings. And I think it creates an even more hassle, not only for the candidates, but for us as elections officers as well. And I think the issues that arise from it are stuff that shouldn't be arising during an election. I think if we have one specific guideline set for every building around campus, at least main campus as well, and different, maybe campus in Jean Augustana as well, I think that is going to help not only us as the elections officers in dealing with postering infractions and helping candidates and guiding them for postering, but also helping candidates themselves, because they don't have to worry about whether or not they've posted improperly or anything like that. I think that's a really important thing, and I am going to implore the CRO and the VPLSFI to deal with that for the this upcoming summer, hopefully for the upcoming elections. So that's one thing. Next thing is universal materials. Do you want to talk about this one, since this is something?
So this year, because the universal materials part of the bylaw is unclear, it was interpreted that universal materials would come out of main candidate budgets, which I believe is a detriment to like the elections process, because those budgets should be able to be used for specific campaign materials, and universal materials are meant to be supplied by the elections office, and therefore should no way reflect spending by individual candidates. Furthermore, we want to clarify what constitutes a universal material. There was some gray areas that were like rightfully exploited this year, but if people had asked the elections office to provide the like universal materials that some candidates used, we may not have been capable of that. For instance, you know, 2x4s for bigger signs outside. Like we just don't know what a universal material is specifically, and that needs to be clarified.
Yeah, and that's an important part of bylaw, and I know there was changes to it this year as well, and I think those changes were good, and if we could continue on that path, then I think it'd be more and more clear for us as elections officers and for candidates as well. And the final thing I'll say, and this is going to be this is my biggest recommendation if I'm going to change the path of elections. And we've all come to an agreement of this as elections officers, is the pre-campaign period. So in the past, candidates have, between the nomination deadline and the candidates meeting, till the when reading week, when after reading week, when the election campaign actually begins, for the executive election I'll talk about briefly, because this is the one that it matters the most. In the past, previous CROs have told candidates that they cannot write anything on social media about them running or anything at all like that. I thought that was too serious and too strict, and I allowed candidates this year to say, I am running for president or something like that, because, you know, you saying that you're running for something, I think is totally fine and doesn't constitute of you campaigning or saying why you should be president or anything like that. So I said that that was okay this year. Yet there are very many people who are confused with the idea of pre-campaigning, what constitutes pre-campaigning, and what is allowed and what isn't allowed. So we as an elections office are going to throw a recommendation. This could radically change the elections or not, but I don't think it will be that radically different. We think that social media campaigning should be totally allowed during this supposed pre-campaigning period between the between the end of the candidates meeting and the Monday when everybody returns from Reedy Week. We think that if you're campaigning as a candidate or your volunteers are campaigning for you on social media, that's totally your right to do that and for the campaign. I think that alleviates the stress of not knowing what is campaigning, what is not, what is pre-campaigning, and also alleviates us having to check through all of your social media accounts throughout the Reedy Week and everything like that, and clears up really any confusion barrier there that I think can be dealt with really easily. We still think that there should be a ban on physical campaigning, so like postering, no class talks because there's no classes, but like postering, putting up banners, stuff like that, there should still be a ban on that throughout this period, that pre-campaigning period. But I think if we allow campaigning on social media during this pre-campaign period that it is called right now, I think candidates have a greater opportunity to try to reach students and try to reach constituents and try to get them to vote as well. I think it's really important that any confusion that we have right now, some of it is still going to be there, but a lot of it we think that can be dealt with bylaw changes, and this is a big thing that we think we could change. And if you want to continue.
It's also reflective of other precedent in municipal elections in that physical campaigning is mandated for a certain period, but it is truly, and I mean this sincerely, impossible for the elections office to monitor and regulate social media use in the pre-campaign period. All we do is play a reactive role. So if you're smart enough, you can post your entire platform the day before, and if I'm sleeping for the 6 hours and I don't see it, then that's 6 hours that you got gained an advantage on your candidate. So the idea is that when the campaign period starts, the application of the rules of the elections office apply. So you can't, you know, have malicious attacks and different things that are within the bylaw, but there's no restrictions on timeline, because it's timeline that's the biggest issue. And what it also does is it means that students are ready and primed for elections when they come back from reading week. It also means that at 9 a.m. when you're scrambling around to put up your posters, you don't have to launch your website, put up your Facebook all at the same time. So what it does is it eliminates this weird week in all the other weeks of the year where you can campaign, where it's the only week that you can't campaign, because as bylaw states, you can campaign all the way up to the beginning of the nomination deadline because you're not under the rules of the elections office, and then there's this weird blackout time, and then you can start again. And this eliminates that and probably, you know, pushes more campaigning to the reading week instead of people starting to figure out this loophole that they can campaign in January and instead of February. And then just like the restrictions on, the campaign period I think is intended to restrict postering so people aren't like physically bombarded by candidates for the week before, for the week after, or for reading week.
Yeah.
So I think it's a pretty reasonable change to the elections office procedure and to bylaw that would probably benefit candidates and the elections office, and I don't think would significantly impact people like the general population of students on campus.
Yeah.
No, I'm just going to add on to what he said, and the reason why we're suggesting this is because there's a lot of confusion in terms of what can I post and what cannot, and can I not post. So I feel like we feel like this would kind of like eliminate that confusion and allow candidates to, like Luke said, be prepared right when that Monday hits at 9 o'clock, just to not be scrambling around and focusing on everything, but just kind of like slowly have everything ready for their campaign.
Yeah, and like just to add to everything that Luke said and Glenda said, I think, you know, the longer that students know about who's running for an election and what each candidate is offering, I think is better in terms of them making a more informed vote. I think, you know, if you look at, as Luke mentioned, if you look at other elections that are held here, like provincial or federal elections, candidates will, who are running for a nomination or for a specific party or who are running for a riding after they win that nomination, are going to be always campaigning on social media, trying to reach more people, trying to get them more involved within the party and within the election as well. They're not going to be physically putting up lawn signs and posters and stuff like that, obviously, because it makes no sense for them in terms of expenses, and I would expect candidates for students' union elections to be the same as well. But I think allowing them to campaign on social media, as we've said, alleviates some sort of stress for candidates during that 9 a.m. deadline once reading week comes back, and also alleviates stress for us as an elections office while we're monitoring throughout the elections office or throughout the elections period as well. And I guess the same would be applied for council elections as well in terms of between that candidate, the end of the candidates meeting and the 9 a.m. on the next day as well. So that's all I think I had on that topic and on what we'll say. That's all the feedback that we want to provide for next year's CRO in terms of what we think so far. Definitely a part of the transition letters that these two will be writing and that I'll be writing as well will include feedback that we get from council, because as I said, a lot of you were on the front lines during the elections and you know a lot more than maybe even we do about what worked, what didn't work, stuff like that. So we'd love to hear your feedback on anything we've said, anything throughout the elections period that we did or in general. And also just any other advice that we can include in our transition letters. Any questions? Fire away.
Thank you very much. We have about a dozen minutes for questions, so we'll start with Governor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just want some clarification on this point.
So, your recommendation would be that we increase campaign time by 1 week.
Yeah, like you'd allow people to campaign on social media and through their websites. Basically what I was thinking, although the logistics of this could be worked out a bit differently, is that the nomination packages are handed in by 4, I did 4 p.m. this year on the Thursday. Candidates meeting is held like 6 to 8 p.m. on the Thursday. We allow candidates to campaign on social media and any other website platforms starting at 9 a.m. on that Friday, up throughout reading week and throughout the election campaign as well, but we don't allow them to physically poster or put up banners or anything like that until the deadline where it is right now, 9 a.m. on the Monday after reading week.
We'll go next to Vice President Bannister.
So I have both a comment and a question, but first of all, thank you all very much for your hard work over the elections. I know it's a lot of work, so we appreciate that. Everyone, my comment is I very much disagree with the idea of having the social media in the week before. There's not, I think in a student context, I personally don't think it's a healthy attitude to get into of year-round campaigning, because we're students first. People are focusing on their courses or their job, depending on their situation. And there's nothing to stop people from doing websites and platforms in the week before the reading week as well, because they're not monitoring their accounts as well. So one of the advantages I think in having that breathe time is you make it so people aren't putting it up around their website, their platform, their social media up around Christmas, and then just keeping it through. Because if you only have that, then because you don't want to have to take it down during that time, so people wait to do it on the first day of campaigning. So I don't know if that made any sense, but the point is, elections, for anyone that's been in an executive election, knows are extremely draining, both like emotionally, physically, mentally, and to extend it to longer periods of time, I am not favorable towards. I could be convinced, but my shoot from the hip reaction is that's something I wouldn't be in favor of. So my question is, this year we had a number of dedicated fee units. So one of my kind of speculations is that that had a significant impact on the voter turnout because they are given a bigger budget to do outreach, things like that. So my question is, to your knowledge, is this year the most amount of money we've spent on outreach for candidates and DFUs? And if so, do you think that had a correlation with the voter turnout? Thank you.
Okay, I'll let you answer the last part of that, and then I'll go into the other things.
So can I just clarify? You mean the candidates spend money, so like Fahim for the DFU and the different?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I know that. Do you know?
Obviously, they're definitely. I do agree with you in the fact that the number of referendums and plebiscites that we had for DFUs definitely did play an impact in the increase in the voter turnout. Whether or not that's the most money that's been spent by candidates in total, I wouldn't be able to tell you. We don't have any records of that. I would guess it's probably more than last year, basically because of the sheer number of candidates in general.
And like traditionally, the highest voter turnout years are in years of UPass approvals. The last highest was in 2007, which was the initial year, and then the next highest was in 2011,
Yeah.
when it went through last. Is that right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, and I
2013.
yeah, and I and yeah, there's a couple other things that I actually remembered to mention now. So I think in terms of reasons why the voter turnout increased, other reasons, I think definitely the referendums and plebiscites thing happened. I think definitely the Joe Canada that's having this year, I think definitely increased voter turnout. And I think yeah, those are the two I'll mention. In terms of what you were saying earlier, I totally forgot, and I remembered now that you were speaking. I think council forums, having those this year actually worked well for council elections. I think that's definitely something that I'll be recommending the next CRO to continue with as well. So in terms of your point about the pre-campaigning period, and I totally see the point of, you know, candidates being exhausted during this especially the executive election period, where adding 1 more week seems somewhat more strenuous for them. The thing that I'll say though is that like there's nothing to my knowledge that is stopping them from putting up their platform or from campaigning before February 16th or whatever the deadline is. So legitimately, and we saw it this year, like I'm not going to call out people individually, but we saw it this year where people were using that to their benefit, Reid's smiling, where there were people were using that to their benefit to campaign beforehand when they had decided to run for the executive position. And so if we're saying that that's allowed, then I think this random week and a half where it's not, well, it's not random, but this week and a half where it's not allowed any campaigning to happen, I think sort of goes against then us allowing that before the nomination deadline in general. But I do take your point about it adding more stress to candidates. I just feel like there is some stress added to candidates that we can take out by taking out this pre-campaign period in terms of social media campaigning, and for us as an elections office as well, while dealing with it throughout reading week in terms of this pre-campaign period.
I think we're motivated by the same thing. It's like we're approaching making it less stressful for candidates in both ways, and we see it as, because candidates can't physically be like on campus doing anything, and plus there's no one here anyway, that getting the chance to put up your website, have your Facebook stuff well developed, we saw some kind of stumbles just because they didn't have time in those first few days, and we saw that as an additional stress on candidates. So it's same motivation, I think.
Very quick follow-up is that, so in your eyes, would it be okay if someone was campaigning on social media for 2 months before the election started, because you're not regulating it and then there's no cool down period?
I think, well, I mean, in terms of bylaw, that's totally fine right now.
Yeah,
so it's like unless bylaw committee decides to like restrict campaigning in general until the nomination deadline, then, or until the Monday at 9 a.m. after reading week, then there's nothing we as an elections office can do to stop people from campaigning before the nomination deadline, and it seems kind of counterintuitive to stop them from campaigning on social media in this pre-campaign period that we call right now.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So we'll move on.
Go next to your council planning.
Thanks for all your hard work during the two election campaigns, and thanks for coming for that presentation.
By election, too.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
Two bits of feedback and then one question. The first was the buttons. All the electorate that I spoke with during my helping out with the exec campaign and then running in the council election, everybody loved them. Because during, you talked about voter fatigue, and especially in the second day of voting, when people are going around doing their last minute push for the one-on-ones.
Yeah.
If somebody has a button that says they voted, and people walk by, like, oh, they voted, I don't need to go bother them.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of sways people, and if there's some way to keep that like a regular thing, I heard nothing but good things about that.
Cool.
Second, you talked about the consistency in posting guidelines all over the place. I 100% agree. I tried looking into that a little bit, and I'm not really too familiar on policies and procedures and whatever at the university level, but I did, from what I found, UAPL does specify that we do get some kind of exemption to the general posting rules, but it doesn't seem like all the faculties follow that, even though the decision was made up on high. So it absolutely makes no sense where there's a general guideline except for here and here, and then over here is completely different. So if there's something that you mentioned, that getting the VPOF to look into it, but if there's anything that council could do to help out with that, I think, especially with, we've all ran an election before, I think we all have some ideas to get on that. And then the question, which I can't remember now, something to do, so you also mentioned budget principles about getting, and this could be hashed out later when the budget's actually being formed, but I noticed this year that there's a lot more Facebook Live and live streams for all the different forums and stuff.
Yeah.
With a little bit more money to get some more dedicated equipment for like a microphone, a new camera or something.
Yeah.
Do you think that, there was also all the plebiscites and everything, but do you think having more access for people who couldn't make it directly to the forums, but could go back and watch them later or watch them remotely, did that have any hand to play in the increased turnout? And would specialized equipment instead of just doing it on your phone, would that help even more?
Yeah, so I'll answer your question first, then we'll get into the point. So in terms of the question, I do think we went more into social media promotion and Facebook promotion as well. Like, we totally cut off printing posters and putting off posters saying vote today or whatever, because I thought that was a total waste of time considering all candidates' posters are up there already. So we concentrated more on SUTV ads, LRT ads, and Facebook promotion as well. Do I think, like, our use of live streaming and that stuff helped in terms of turnout? You can go ahead.
No.
Okay.
Like, really, there was never at any point on any of the live streams, except the Meyer Horowitz, that there are more than 8 people watching. And I'm sure the 8 people watching are more than engaged in the elections already. In terms of the equipment, we have the equipment, and it took me a week to figure it out, and that was the week during the election, because we ordered something with Mark, like, kind of close to the deadline, and that was one of the things
That was really tough as a DRO, not having that transition and not knowing that equipment was going to be needed. So now that I know how to use all the equipment, there'll be a nice document for the next DRO specifying how to do it exactly. High quality streaming to Facebook Live, like in the full HD format that it was used at Meyer Horowitz, is probably outside of the budget of the elections office. It costs about $500 a month. And like we talked about it with like the administration, and they decided it probably wasn't worth it. But I think the live streams are great because they catalog the forums, so people going back can find them, and I think that's very valuable. But in terms of the actual engagement while the live stream is happening is pretty minimal, but I think that's okay. It's just a good way to capture the forums and have them online. It's an accessibility thing, even if people don't use it.
Yeah, that's basically, I was gonna say that it's like it seems like those live streams happen more for people to go back and watch them instead of actually watching in the moment, and I think that's a good thing with having those live streams like we did this year.
And some of them were crappy, and that was because one of them got streamed off the data on my phone, which was fun.
So just before we get to the next question, because we only have a couple minutes left, we have a number of questions still from counselors. We have a bunch of questions on the live stream. So if the CRO and DRO, like the CRO and DROs, or the elections office, I should say, is all right with it, I would recommend extending the presentation by however long council thinks is appropriate.
It's
I saw Vice President Gosain's flag go first, so.
They don't need to watch the weather's quenched tonight, so it's okay.
Nobody is watching.
Let's give it 10 minutes?
How many people are on the list?
There is currently six counselors who have questions, plus I think there's four or five questions on the live stream.
Oh, 15, that seems more appropriate.
All right, 15 minutes. Seconded by Councilor Kleinman. Is there any opposition to extending the presentation by an additional 15 minutes?
Yeah, and if you have more questions, for sure, we'll still ask them.
All right, so we'll continue on. I'm not sure what's next. I think it might be Vice President Sundari.
Okay, so thank you again, you guys, for having this presentation, and also great job. Voter turnout was amazing this year. Now, I've got more of a comment than a question. So I really like what was done with the forums this year, especially having all of the different kinds of forums by different groups. I think that's something that should be continued on into the next year. However, my one criticism with that, I do have some friends who aren't directly engaged with the SU, but they were interested in this election. The issue with that is that they didn't know when any of the forums were going on. So it always came to be this kind of thing. I'm like, oh, are you coming to this forum? And they're like, oh, I didn't know that there's an international student forum, or I didn't know that there's a residence forum. So my one thing that I would say kind of transition into next year is maybe a little bit more outreach for the different forums. I think a lot of us saw that it was oftentimes the executive campaign teams and the gateway that appeared in a lot of the forums, and I'd like to, you know, see more students kind of engaged in coming to all of those different things. So
do you have any ideas specifically? Like
yeah.
Where
Yeah, I would say even just like sponsored ads. Like a lot of us had sponsored ads that were going on Facebook, and that's something that I saw kind of drew a lot of people in. Maybe even working a little bit more closely with these different groups to get the word out there. You know, I kind of assumed that the PLLC forum would have PLLC students, but
well, finish. That's the one that I know you were talking about.
Like all of them.
No, I understand. I was so for the PLLC forum, I was told that they were going to invite PLLC students.
Yeah.
Obviously I'm not going to just shift all the blame towards the PLLC, but I think in general with that forum specifically, I'll talk about first, and maybe other ones. I put that forum also obviously to outreach the PLLC, but also as sort of like a preparatory forum for other forums, which may be seen as more important for the election. I think it worked well in that, in terms of like getting to know what you're saying, getting to know each other as candidates as well, I think worked that way. And I'm hoping the next CRO does a sort of like a preparation forum like that. It doesn't have to be PLLC or anything like that, but does a forum like that. And in terms of like outreach for all the forums, in terms of getting more people, I do agree. And I think in some of the specific forums, like substage forums, which allows, you know, it divides the races in half, so it allows more races to talk about themselves a bit more. I think we'd like to get more people at them and more people involved in this live stream as well. And that's something that we as an elections office are for the last couple of years, are always investigating to continue to expand.
Yeah, no, it sounds great, but maybe
Yeah, no, I
work to get a few more form, like each cash receipt form, like the directed forms are really good.
Yeah.
I really love those. So maybe see if you can work with those different groups kind of in December or early
Yeah.
January to kind of get those dates as early
Yeah.
as possible and just kind of go from there. But yeah, thanks guys.
Yep.
Thanks
Thank you.
everybody.
We'll go next to Councilor Angus.
Cool. Yeah, first of all, thank you for the presentation. I'm glad to see having the 2 euros paid off, cause I know that was something we did discuss last year, so I'm glad to see that it was a great use of money and all that stuff. So my question was actually gonna be about the purpose of the levy form, but we kind of discussed that. So I guess to kind of branch off of that, I have the thrilling experience of attending like almost every forum. And I noticed especially by the end, a lot of the answers, a lot of the conversations that we're having on stage were very repetitive, and obviously I don't expect students to go to all of the forums cause I don't wish that on them. But I guess just asking you guys, do you think the amount of forums that were had this year was an appropriate amount, or would you wanna see, would you recommend less? Please no more, but less if possible in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think well, first off, I'll say the ISA forum was sort of like a spontaneous thing that happened. It wasn't directed by us as the elections office, so that's a branched off thing that they want to do themselves, and it's great to see candidates going there as well. In terms of the rest of the forums, if there is too much, I think it can be considered that way, but I also do think having students and especially like different branches of campus know more about candidates and also learn more about issues that you know each specific race is relating to them as like a branch of campus, I think worked really well. And I think it's hard to see where we could also cut off like a forum, if you're getting what I'm saying. Like as I said, the PLLC forum was something we used not only to outreach to PLLC, and they had approached me in like early November or something like that to doing in doing that, but also like sort of a preparatory forum as well. The two substage forums are things that happen every year, and I think those work well in terms of you know just getting people who are eating lunch and stuff. And then obviously my Hogwarts forum, and then I think the other two forums, the CSJ forum, the residence forum, are actually really crucial forums in my opinion, because both of them are appealing to issues that are really important to council, to executive election candidates, and I think getting people, getting candidates in those specific locations is really important to answering questions that regular students on main campus who like live with their parents or something like that don't know or don't know their issues. But getting those questions directly from people living in residence, for example, or people living at or people going to CSJ specifically, for example, I think is really important. That's why I think those forums are very important. So then like in previous years it's been the same amount of forums except for the one PLLC and I guess the ISA one. It like I could definitely see like maybe a decrease of one if you're looking at that, but other than that, I think it's a good amount of forums, I'll say. But we'll look for anybody else's opinion on that.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councilor Perun.
All right, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to your office for the work that you guys did. I think that 4 years is probably the most well-run election. I have a couple questions, but I'm gonna ask them one at a time, because I don't wanna piss off the speaker. But follow the rules, it's fine. But I will make a comment like everybody else. It was really great to see the DROs out and about and actually like encouraging people to vote, like kind of basically campaigning on their own, in a manner of speaking. I haven't seen that before. And I think I saw them more often than actual candidates. So really, that was really great to see. I think that had a really special effect on the voter turnout. To actually have people like going out and like encouraging people to just vote and not pandering for like for personal. So I think that was really good. I would hope to see that more often. The first question I have though is at the beginning you guys mentioned that you had some confusion in terms of some how some ballots were interpreted, particularly the new ones going into election. Did you guys consider going to the diagnostic board and requesting them to clarify? Cause that is practically their duty. And in recent years they've been that board has been met less and less. So I'm sure they have time to do that. Or like in the future do you think that would be that would be a good option?
Well, you're talking about during the election period, right?
Yeah.
I do agree that maybe Dai Board can get, although I don't like it. No, I like Dai Board. It's just like the thing I'll say to that though is that me as a chief returning officer and dealing with Dai Board, my time is already limited during the election campaign, especially during the executive election. And I know that DROs, it's the same thing as well. So it's hard, I think, for us to have to deal with the added layer of die board and clarifying bylaws when I think it is the chief returning officer's role to interpret bylaw the way they see. And if there's complaints of that, those complaints are brought to die board after that, for which there to be a appeal or ruling on after that. And yeah, to your point earlier, I definitely do think, you know, the DROs were out on Balmora, and that was mostly because we had two DROs. In the past, having just one DRO had to deal with more logistical stuff with candidates, and I think that hampered our effects on getting out the vote.
Great, thank you. Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councilor Christensen.
I have two things to say. One is coming back to the pre-campaigning period. There is that definition in the bylaws that say pre-campaigning is between the time the nomination deadline closes and when the period is set. But technically, what you can do can be totally done without changing the bylaws, because you as the chief returning officer can set the date, the time and date that a campaign starts. It doesn't have to be Monday.
Mm-hmm.
It could be immediately following the campaign period. So, but that would apply to physical materials too,
yeah.
Right? So, but just for that, like, as a, just a clarification, there is no, it's completely within your realm to decide on when that happens.
Yeah.
So for future, that even
okay,
though change that could happen. My second question was kind of just related to the voter fatigue aspect. Especially because council elections always seem to get a bit less stuff. In past, there's been discussion about the idea of merging the election into one super election. And I wondered, just for fun, what your thoughts would be on that, if it would be logistically possible, or would it be too much? Any thoughts you have?
No, and I thank you, and thank you for the first point as well. So for this, yeah, for the second point of the question, so I definitely do think that there is voter fatigue at the end of the 4 weeks in total of elections. In terms of combining it into a super election, I think, honestly, I would say that there'd be more DROs needed for that in some ways.
Pack.
So, like, and I know in the past elections officers, the elections office has had volunteers and everything, which can cover some of those roles. I just worry about the fact that there is the perception out there on campus that, oh, executives are more important than counselors, and, you know, they do most of the work and stuff like that, which I know personally, as being a former counselor, isn't true in terms of executives being more important than council, because council is very important. I just think that if you merge those two elections together, there's going to be a blurring of, you know, which one matters more, which one should I pay attention to more. And I think a lot of the council candidates are going to be sort of, I'll say, scared in terms of during their campaigning, in terms of, you know, having to compete as well and getting their message out and their platforms out as at the same time with executive candidates as well. In terms of moving, I guess, in the general aspect of moving the council election, I know there's been talk of moving it maybe like one more week, having a week break in between the elections. I think that's possible. The other suggestion could be, like, I know McHugh or Sam does theirs in October, which I don't know if that's anybody really wants that idea, but that's another option I've seen out there. But I think that if people do want to move the election, or if councillors want to move, next year's councillors want to move the election, I think the best option would probably be provide some sort of week break. I think it does sort of, because one thing I mentioned when we came here in early January is that we are hoping to capitalize on momentum of getting people to vote in the executive election to run for council election, which I think worked well. And that's why I think maybe it originally has been like the straight 4 weeks. Maybe if you add that extra week, kind of loses that momentum. But I could see the argument for that. It does decrease the chance of voter fatigue by the end of the council election.
And like the lower turnout in council elections is also due to the infrastructure of council elections. Candidates don't do class talks across campus continuously. Like, I know many of the candidates, and this is no problem because they still won, did no class talks in that entire week, and I think those are the most engaging things. So the reality is that voter turnout in the council elections will likely always be lower. It's just like, how high can you get it to, like, nudge to a 10% to an 11% kind of thing? It's never going to hit 20 just because of that. Councillors don't need to do that, or maybe they should, but they don't right now.
If I may, also lots of people that aren't successful in exec elections run for council, and
yeah,
to see those people
yeah, sure,
denied that opportunity, I think would be a real shame.
I know, that's really important.
Yeah. And the last thing I was going to mention is, I know you, I mean, with your experience in bylaw committee, If you had any thoughts on like those whole pre-campaign period of what should be allowed or anything, I think we'd love to hear that. I do agree with the point that I could set it out as a different date or anything like that, but maybe you have any opinions on this whole pre-campaign period in general.
Well, so from my perspective, it's one of those things that I can very differently. We it's I see why it's there, but it's if we can't have a period before that where we're regulating it because people aren't part of the election process, right? If I'm campaigning in January because I want to be vice president academic, right? There's how can we control that? So if let's say I ever made a post in January and then we set up rules, so it's like, oh, I talked about it once and now I can't run for it. Like that seems to be punishing people. I think generally the people who did pre-campaign this year, outside like before the pre-campaign period, weren't going super hard or like having like saying I'm running for president or I am like here's my presidential platform so much. It
no.
becomes more apparent afterwards, but I think it's getting your name out there more.
Yeah.
And then the pre-campaign period, if that's what the elections office proposes, I'm sure the next ballot committee will look at adjusting things and then it'll be up to council. I think there's the pros and cons to it, and there's pros and cons to everything. What we have right now is has pros and cons, right?
Yeah, and so it depends on the next ballot committee as well, so what do you think?
We'll jump over to Councillor Mondo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So if you jump topics a bit, I agree there was a lot of confusion around the universal materials bylaws and such during the election. So I'm just wondering from your perspective, if you could rewrite the universal materials bylaws, what ideally do you think they should look like for candidates and what type of regulations should exist for what can be a universal material? Should they have to be budgeted? Like, if you could start from scratch, what would you want them to look like?
Do you want to go more into this?
Well, the way I read it is that realistically, because the CRO sets the limits on the universal materials budget, there is no limit on the universal materials budget, essentially, which is not really a problem except an expenditure for the students' union. So I guess potentially like having your set budget, I forget what is it, $450 or whatever, and then having an additional budget of $100 for very specific things, like it could be listed. If you want to spend the $100 on getting the thickest banner paper in the world, you can go and do that. If you want to go buy new tape, you can do those things. And then there are specific things like universal material budget cannot be used on anything to do with like social media or like non-definitionally universal materials. And then just a set frame and then just leave it at that. Just clear boundaries, I think.
I'd almost wonder, you know, we as an elections office spend an amount of money before the elections period buying like tape, banner paper, stuff like that, and we put our expenses towards that. And most candidates, if we're just talking about executive election right now, will use those universal materials that we've bought that are in their office. But there are some candidates who are gonna buy their own banner paper and everything like that, and that's totally their right to do that. I wonder if you're gonna allow some candidates to use that $100 budget for universal materials. Should the elections office be spending their expenses as well in terms of getting universal materials as well before the election?
Yeah.
That's what I wonder. And you know, it's and as I said, it's totally up to the candidates themselves if they want to buy the universal materials for their own. But if we're going to put that, then maybe that adds too many expenses to the elections office as well.
Yeah.
All right. I think our last question is going to come from the live stream. During elections, questions that were extremely personal were allowed to be directed at specific candidates. Why was this allowed?
So this is in terms of talking about conduct at forums and maybe a clarification in bylaw about conduct at forums. I think, you know, if we're talking about personal questions that are alleviated candidates, I myself, and if we're talking about the Meyer Awards forum in specific, I myself did my best to block these questions, and I will admit that there was a lapse of judgment in terms of allowing these questions that should have not been allowed. But I think if we have clarification in terms of in bylaw, in terms of what types of questions can be asked, and allowing the CRO to and the DROs in other forms as well to strike down questions like that is going to help, because I know me, as having been a bystander in previous elections, questions like that were questions that may have been deemed personal asked to candidates during elections. It was totally up to the CRO to decide if that's personal or not. And I kind of think that that's, although the CRO should have great judgment, I kind of think that if you're leaving it just up to the CRO and their judgment, I think it's it could cause problems within the election within candidates, and I hope that's something that, as I was mentioning, can be solved by bylaw committee.
All right, well, that's all the time we have. Mr. Muhammad had a bunch of other questions, but...
Can I just take a quick straw poll?
Sure.
So, were the videos lame,
yeah,
or were they good? Because
like,
we weren't
they
sure.
Were useful?
There were, Reed
saw
says
the
good.
First.
You saw the video? Did you see it because you saw it on the elections page or from an advertisement?
Both.
Like a sponsored
yeah.
post.
Oh, yeah.
I
saw both.
You saw both? And if it was up to it next year, would you suggest that the DROs allocate like a significant amount of money to hire a production company to create these videos again?
I think we can use the same videos.
Yeah. It was expensive. Like
just the
it
dates.
Was,
yeah, the date. We could get the dates changed. We were just wondering because it was kind of a new venture of like allocating the budgets.
But do you think it got like the point across of like vote? Because that's like our
yeah.
main focus.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Cool.
We weren't sure.
Okay.
Cool.
That's
all right,
that's
so
it. Then we're good.
Our time's up. We do have a couple of questions. Like we still have like 5 or 6 questions. I don't know if council wants to extend again, or if you want to just have those questions asked offline to the elections office. Yes, Vice President Bannister.
I'll motion to extend.
By how long?
5 minutes.
All right,
so
we'll extend by 5 minutes.
You can go if you want. Don't worry about it.
If that's all right with the three of you.
Yeah, that's,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Is there a seconder for the motion to extend? I saw Councillor Howie's placard go up. Is there anyone opposed to extending the presentation by an additional 5 minutes?
Is that going to be enough?
There's only one more question. Well, on the live stream.
On the live stream, there's only one more question on the live stream, but there's also 2 more questions from Chambers.
Okay,
so.
I'll try to answer quicker than.
All right, so we'll go to the gateway as a question.
I just want to know what tangible things can your office achieve when it comes to conduct at forums, because you talked about that a little bit, and by what time you can achieve these things.
Are you just like asking like in terms of like what can be done about getting better conduct at forums, or like?
Yeah, in terms of outlining proper conduct at forums,
yeah.
Because you were talking about how some questions are out of line and were really personal.
Yeah, so I think, as I mentioned in bylaw, there is like zero, not zero, but there is very little regulations regarding conduct by not only candidates, but volunteers or just regular students as well as forums. And I think if that's clarified, I think that would be best. In terms of what the elections office can do, I think if we're able to tone down the rhetoric during these forums and also cut personal questions, it's better for the election in general. It's really hard for us as an elections forum as well to differentiate between personal and malicious attacks and just positioning yourself against the other candidate, because the second part is totally okay. That's like happens in federal and provincial elections, and that's what you're supposed to be doing in an election if you want to win. But the first part is something that should not be allowed, and I think it's important that we sort of create a more bold line between those two. Yeah, so I think in terms of by what time, I think definitely at least before the executive election. The by-election doesn't have any forums, so that's the timeline that we would that the next CRO should look for. And in terms of what tangible things, I think maybe in the candidates meeting outlining examples more of what is deemed as a personal attack or a question versus what we would deem as being okay, I think would be more helpful. And it's hard to stuff a lot of things in the candidates meeting. But I think setting more guidelines around that without keeping it very unambiguous and also explaining it a bit more during this pre-campaign period, I think would be the number one thing that we can do as an elections office.
We'll jump over to Governor Champagne.
kind of related to the general conversation is single. What do we have any, does your office have any ways to measure the impact it has on elections and election turnout? And I mean directly, not indirectly to other candidates or joke candidates.
Yeah.
But how does, do you have any ways to accurately measure how your office impacts those types of metrics?
Yeah, no. and like, you know, in terms of suggestions, we'd love to get suggestions from people how we can do that, maybe offline as well. But I think
We can measure social media reach,
yeah.
But within the current budget offered to the elections office, we're not going to spend $4,000 doing a research poll to campus and taking that money away from running the election. But, you know, maybe if that was something incorporated.
Which, in my opinion, would be ineffective in general, taking some sort of research
yeah.
poll, I think, especially with, like, biases that may be within the poll in terms of who you're approaching and they may be involved in some way. I think that'd be inefficient and hard to gauge really any impact.
It's a very unexact science.
Yeah.
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 We'll jump back over to the live stream very quickly. There's another question from Mr. Muhammad. As it stands now, executives are allowed to use campaign pages as their official executive pages. Then they are allowed to use them if they choose to run again. In your opinion, is this an unfair advantage? What can be done to mitigate this?
I don't really have an opinion on that. I think that's just up to bylaw committee and general election regulations to fix if they deem so. I think that's, yeah, I'll leave it at that. I don't have an opinion on it, and different people have different opinions on whether that's an unfair advantage or not. But, yeah, I'll leave it at
One final question coming from Councilor Brew.
Just a quick comment on, like you might not want to do this, but what you could just do a survey while you go out and make it, like, buttoned out or whatever.
Yeah.
We do quick polls, or like a survey. But my other question was, in regards to the My Harvest Forum, where in the academic calendar, the one out from 12 to 12 to 1 is supposed to be class free.
Yep.
Multiple times I've seen from friends or former professors just not caring about that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, they'll just have their class anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Or leaving up to students and just kind of vote on it. Going forward, what would you plan to do in terms of maybe just enforcing this a bit more, that professors do let students off at the time and inform students that they can vote this forum?
Yeah.
And also, the minority forum typically does extend far beyond that 1 hour. Would you recommend advocating to extend that 1 hour? Do you like being maybe 2 or 3? Or just
yeah.
Not really possible, but.
Yeah, so I'll answer that last part. In terms of extending it, I feel like that'd be impossible, basically, given, you know, professors being professors and everything. In terms of getting more people, I don't know, maybe this is me biased, but a lot of you maybe can speak to this. I did think that we got more people to the Meyer Horowitz Forum this year, which is a great thing. We as an elections office, and this is part of this credit also goes to Alex with communications and the Students' Union, we send more directed emails to students themselves and to professors, not just one whole mass email at the beginning of the election saying, this is a list of candidates, this is a list of forums, this is everything. I think we sent more directed emails to students telling them, you know, the Meyer Horowitz forum is at this time, academic calendar says that, or no, we don't even mention the academic calendar, we just say that this time is canceled and you are allowed to go to this forum, class is canceled during this time. And we were able to also send directed emails to professors reminding them of that. We were able to send emails to professors beforehand about class talks, which I think centralized the system, which was a great thing as well. And in terms of moving on forward, I think, you know, continuing with those emails and maybe directing more in terms of letting professors know earlier about this mandated time off, I think is important.
All right, thank you.
So at this point, that's all the time we have, unless people want to extend it additionally. Just kidding. we don't have any more questions. I think there might be a couple more questions on the live stream. But, I think that's a question for open forum. thank you very much to the elections office for coming down here and spending like an hour of their time with us.
Yes, no worries.
We appreciate it, and looking forward to seeing those reports.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
Thanks.
7 PM. If council would like, I can send out an electronic form, like an electronic version of the council scholarship form in case you need it. I'll send that out. Sounds good. 7:57.
Yeah. problem
It's
is
necessary
there's
for the council to cover these jobs, because like
budget's
$300
so
is gonna
small.
buy me two
That's
meals.
the thing, budget's so small that there's a lot of shit that just needs reimbursal, and like I'm kind of fed up because I think that it's stupid but sort of capital like anything crazy,
Increasing creativity
like anything that's kind of crazy about it is just like they got confused by what's mine.
For each budget for a referendum there shall be a yes side and a no side.
Sorry?
Does that mean there should be or there can't be?
I think by that one you could say.
So I think that you have to be able to vote yes and you have to be able to vote no, but then people don't have to have like a representative back.
Each side shall select from among the members represented.
But also there's a whole bunch in the bylaw that we can't.
Good to know.
For me, like when you when somebody comes to board, they're unless they opt out of two persons as well, they're usually augmented with somebody from the board.
Yeah, so a side should be.
Yeah, and only one like last year.
Wow, look at that. Hey, that's who in the post that's a what?
But there should be something from both sides to present.
What is that incentive?
Like then select someone of I'm so sore, I've had work and now what is that? That's good. We should see the like well S A S or whatever. So Ontario it's like the Ontario Law School. Okay, so they sent me an email saying you've accepted as a representative. I guess I am. Is it there are two deadlines. No, November 1st, which obviously passed because the Ottawa deadline was February 1st. And the second deadline is May 1st, okay? So technically he has until May 1st to send it.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And then but they told me we need the letter to close your file and study it. So if he sends it on May 1st, they'll accept it, but chances are qu'ils ont revu toutes les autres applications et qu'ils seraient comme sorry.
It's like, well, you just came after. It's comme ça qu'ils vont à toi.
I know.
Take them as they go.
I know.
Well.
Yeah.
Ça t'en dit pas le monde, ton sac de camion?
Oui, j'ai le camion. I hope he sent something, I don't know.
Oh, man. Ah, ça c'est plat.
Oh.
Should have just asked when you need to write something.
That's just one of my,
Johnson?
Yeah.
One thing I
well, he probably did, to be honest. Like, he probably said.
Then he just write something.
I don't know.
Like, I'm gonna chuck my guess to counsel, like, no, I'm gonna share that. Just because I wear more nuts and bolts, I cover day to day things instead
Look
of
at it. C'est pas cette année l'année prochaine.
Hopefully.
J'espère que le budget là, j'espère que le budget là,
Budget principles? Yeah. You know what? Je veux dire, finance doesn't have a lot of pressure.
Yeah, but
you know,
we don't follow that rule here, that we deal with stuff in committee and then it should just like,
yeah, it looks good.
Well, for certain shows.
No, I don't see that meeting in a long time.
Shit. In the fashion, it could be always an excellency thing. It's like, alright, this is our goal for turnout. Yeah, but you don't even know if you're affecting the turnout.
Yeah.
Because you can't tell. So it's like, wow. Like, you mean there's nothing you look at other than turnout?
Yeah. So come.
This is so stupid.
Yeah,
okay. Il faut qu'il trouve un moyen. C'est le reach de social media, that's something.
Yeah.
It's at least something
yeah,
to look
metric.
At.
Yeah, like, I'm surprised that they didn't use it, because you can track the number of views, you can
read it in spirit, so we can look at that. It's like, yeah, you can look at that. You should look at that. Has it increased? Has it decreased?
Also, I'm really interested, just for my own curiosity, and also the like betterment of the elections process. I mean, je pense pas qu'ils ont un moyen de faire ça without a survey. But
so maybe we need an election
survey.
These are
all
the rules
are made.
We have a chief.
Yeah,
really
what's that mean?
emotional,
What's
especially
Oh,
for
sorry.
me.
Yeah,
I don't have so many stories.
Parce que t'sais, puis comme il disait, oh, je sais pas quel forum que je coupe de. Yeah. Every new one. If you really wanted to, you hit
yeah.
that home. Parce que comme.
Yeah.
Y'en avait ça, y'en avait les grandes heures, Joe Canada, Second DRO, new campaign. All those factors, and you're telling me we only got 4% more from 25 to 29?
It's still pretty good, considering the numbers.
No, it's great to have that increase, but that means we're never going to get over 30% unless we start investing like huge resources.
Yeah, and unless like people do class talks all year round and get people engaged politically all year round. Which, like, to be honest, if the exec had less a lesser workload, comme si on survivait, like we would have.
Whoa!
Let's get this all done.
person I saw like that day. I was also very happy to learn.
All right. Come back to order.
Can you click the chairman screen button?
All right. So we'll come back to order here. That wraps up presentations for tonight's agenda. You guys good? Good then? All right, move on to executive committee reports. Do any members of the executive wish to make a report? Go with Vice President Patches.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The majority of my updates have been on my written report, but I have two things to inform council that happened afterwards. First one is I'm happy to announce that the Students Union Building is now officially BOMA Best Silver certified. From our previous certification of green. So we took some extra initiatives this year, brought some more sustainable products and different items, and we are now certified one level above where we were before. And then if we get out at a reasonable time tonight, even if not a reasonable time, if we have a little bit more energy, we have Disney trivia going on at Rimmel Top tonight. So that's pretty sick. Everyone here loves it. So make sure to check it out. Thank you.